published it in a edited down version and are now sort of doing a book tour and are on TV sort of promoting this book that is Carl's book. And so that sort of is the basis for where they go off on a road trip and try to find out who has stolen this material.
And I've got to stop you right there because we're right out of time. But I do urge people to go to The Royal and see Doppelganger Paul and check out the website, doppelgangerpaul.com, doppelgangerpaul.com. Dylan, thank you so much for joining me by telephone. Have a great time here in Toronto with the film.
Oh, thanks so much. And I'll say, too, just if you like the movie, join our Facebook group and we'll get in contact with you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye.
And I have a pair of tickets to give away to Doppelganger Paul, 416-946-7000. Got to do it quick because Abby Dance is coming up right next.
Uh-huh. Yeah! Yeah! I didn't see that one now.
You're listening to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Hi, welcome to Evidence. You're on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox.
And I am Andrea Duff.
Later on in the show, we will be talking to choreographer Sylvain Amard. He's the artistic director of Sylvain Amard Dance on their production of Fragments, which are going to be taking place one night only, Saturday, March 3rd at Harborfront Center. Also, Andrea, you're going to be talking a bit about the show that you are in that we started last week.
Yes.
Yeah. How would you describe it? Les Demi-Monde Cabaret at the moment or something.
It's
right?
Not a cabaret. It's a theater performance.
A theater, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Not but. It's not a...
Not but. Not but. No buts about it.
Yeah.
Okay, and now we have Amy Nosbacham. She's co-writer, composer, performer, and she's here on the Theater Ad Infinitum Canada presentation of The Big Smoke, and it shows, it's already showing, to March the 4th at Factory Studio. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you just got back from the UK. You've been living in UK. What led you to go to UK? How early on in your years did you get there?
Well, I went to study. I finished my university studies in Montreal at Concordia.
Mm-hmm.
And I then went to the school Lecoq, Jacques Lecoq in Paris, mm-hmm. which is a physical theater school. And when I finished my studies there, I wanted to stay in Europe and work in Europe, but wanted to work in English. So I moved to London, where some of my colleagues, some of the ex-students from Lecoq were living as well, and we formed a company, and I Ad Infinitum was born. And now I'm moved to Toronto as of this summer. I am a resident of Toronto. Very excited to be here and to be making theater here. I think it's a really exciting city. I'm really inspired.
Right. Lecoq, can you explain a bit about the training you got in Lecoq and how it affected you as a performer?
Lecoq is an amazing school because it's not a school necessarily for performers only. It's for theater makers. And so people come into this school who are actors, directors, architects, artists, anyone who's interested in changing perhaps the way of looking at the world. It's not just about performing. It's about creating giving people a new lens to look through the world through it in a different way. So perhaps if I'm creating a piece, I won't necessarily go about it by reading words from a page, by having a script. I will create it organically through up on my feet devising, which is improvisation. So we create the plays that Ad Infinitum creates are all created in this way. So instead of sitting down on your seat and writing a script, you're up on your feet proposing ideas with your body. So for example, if I'm creating a character, I have a loose idea of where this character is going or what he is or one small thing about him, and then I'll physicalize it with my body. And from there, from this physicalized character that I have up on the stage with the director watching me, then we can go from there. Then we can create plot and atmosphere and story. It comes out of it organically. Now, when you have a bunch of actors up on stage, that's one way of doing it. You're reacting, and you're reacting very honestly. When it's a one-person show, it's slightly more work, I'd say, because you're constantly proposing, and that thankfully you have a director there who's guiding you along the way. But it sure is a lot of work. But the Lecoq process is it's extremely unique, and you're given these in the first year. You're given very broad tools that you may not know what the heck they are. What are you going to do with them? What does any of this mean? Why did I spend 2 weeks talking about the length and width of the color blue? But then, then in the second year, some of them, or maybe just a whisper of it, starts to make sense when you start getting into making characters and melodrama and clown and burlesque and all these different things. But it gives you the opportunity to look at nature. Lecoq really forces you to look at maybe a crumpling piece of paper or a smashed piece of glass. And it sounds a bit artsy-fartsy, wanky, perhaps. But, you take everything with a grain of salt, and at the end of the day, by the end of the second year, you have all these wonderful tools to draw on for making theater in the future. And it may not make sense to you till literally years, maybe decades later. You may not know. You may only be then that you realize how rich a schooling, teaching you've acquired.
It sounds like a very personal process. Even though you have these parameters, it's very individual. It seems that way. If you have such vast ideas, then it can only be informed by who you are personally.
And choices. Also what you want, right. What you want to do with this school, with schooling. I mean, not everybody who comes out continues to make theater even.
Right.
But because I remember when I finished my theater studies at Concordia thinking, I had a lovely experience there, and I think it's a great program. But for me, it wasn't narrow enough in terms of I still feel today that it's very easy to get caught up in the theater world and to start making theater or being in other people's pieces for not entirely the right reasons. And this sure isn't it's the same in the dance world completely. In all art fields, there's a lot of competition and ego and people who are often just a sour taste, and you come out of maybe an audition or something, and you go, "What the heck am I doing here? Why am I? What is this?" You have to keep reminding yourself, "Why am I in this business? Why don't I just become a dentist?" And what was so refreshing about, so I came out of my theater studies not sure at Concordia, not sure what if I wanted it bad enough to, you know. It's just a lot of work. You gotta wake up, and all you can think of is what am I gonna create? What I want to make theater, and how am I gonna do it, and why do I want to do it, and what stories do I want to tell? What's the burning story that I want to tell? And if you're not feeling that, then really it's a lot of work, and I don't see why you want to go through all that pain. And what was so refreshing about Lecoq was the very first day, the first minute, really. That it was very clear that was not one moment of wasted time, and it was all about the work, all about the craft, and all about, as you say, a sort of finding out in yourself why mm-hmm. you want to do this, and what stories do you want to tell.
So you personally feel, it sounds like you felt more nurtured in that artistically.
It was right for me.
Yeah, which is so important. I think that's one thing, like you're saying, especially when it comes to arts and training in arts, that, you know, we're so excited to just be accepted into a program.
Right.
That it's hard to say, this actually isn't the right fit for me.
Completely. And that was my biggest fear when I moved to Paris, because I get to move to Paris and this world-renowned school, great. And my biggest fear was that I was going to hate it and I wasn't going to have the courage to leave. But thankfully, it was the right fit for me. It's not the right fit for anyone. For everyone.
But that sort of alludes to arts in itself, right?
Yeah.
So personal.
So how was the process begun for The Big Smoke? How did you create that character?
The Big Smoke was born, we did the Edinburgh Fringe in 2009 with a two-hander comedy. And at the end of that process, the Nir Paldi, who was my co-star then, that was another Devise show, we turned to each other and said, we want to do it. We're going to come back to the Ed Fringe next year, and we're going to do a one-woman show. It's going to be sung. It's going to be musical. And so we knew that. We just knew that. Because I work a lot with my voice, and it's a tool that I like to work with, and music is such a huge part of my life. It's just sort of clear that one day I would make theater using that. Then around the same time, after that seed had been planted, I had a conversation with a good friend of mine who recently lost her child, and I was listening to her speaking about this tragedy, and was just struck by the strength of this woman, and in the face of such tragedy. And I came home and I called Nir and I said, we've got to tell a story. It's got to be about strong, tragic female character. And then we began to look for sources of inspiration. And I think being from North America was a reason I immediately thought of Sylvia Plath and then Anne Sexton and the Confessional Poets, and Virginia Woolf being an icon of a woman who felt completely out of place in her surroundings, in the Victorian era. She just felt, she was writing about how she just felt completely alone, and that she felt off, and that she didn't feel right. The idea, and it's the same with Plath in the 50s and Sexton in the 50s and 60s, this icon of woman, what is it to be woman, and what is correct, what is incorrect, and what should you want? And that these women just felt, well, I don't want what I'm supposed to want, but I don't know what I want. And they wrote about it, especially the Confessional Poets, who just go right to the heart of it. And they don't, you know, these poets were writing about, in the 50s and 60s, writing about, you know, miscarriage and menstruation and depression and wanting to, you know, slit your wrists and death, and just dancing around these dark, dark themes. That they just were fearless, absolutely fearless, which is just such an inspiration. I'm just completely, especially Anne Sexton, is so inspired by their courage in the face of depression. These women were just going through such they had such tormented lives, and they were just so talented. And this is reflected very much in The Big Smoke, in the story of Natalie and in our play.
It's interesting that those themes were what inspired you, because they're still topics that are so taboo now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it's still a story that's very relevant.
Completely, yeah.
Was it a scary process?
It began when we began, we didn't know if it was going to work.
Right.
You know, one woman, 70 minutes, a cappella.
Nightmare.
I don't know. So when the first day of rehearsal, Nir asked me to sing him a fairy tale. I think it was Little Red Riding Hood or something. And he stopped me after a few minutes, said, of course, it's going to work. It's amazing. There's no problem. We can now begin, because we know that, of course, you can capture an audience with that. But we use the same tools that we were given in school. And we use the same, you know, physical theater approach. So it doesn't, for me, it didn't feel so different, because all the way we work was somewhat similar in that we tried to, instead of a body moving around, it was the voice. And so you can kind of direct it and shape it in the same way, mm-hmm. or that's at least how we approached it, in that the same sort of rules apply in what works on stage and what doesn't. What does this capture me? Does this need a shift in rhythm? Does this need, you know, it's the same.
Beyond the logistics, logistically though, the emotional journey, I mean, I'm assuming at some point in time it has to become personal.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of us in the play, for sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, in anything that I write, that we write, there's certainly a lot of our own experience in it. I don't know how else to write.
Exactly.
But it's also based on a lot of my friends and people who are close to both me and Nir. A lot of their experiences are in the play as well. And of course, the poetry. I mean, we wanted to find a way of telling these, you know, horrific and taboo kind of the subject that's very tender. We want, how do we communicate this in the most appropriate way? How do we tell this story? What is the best possible way of telling this specific story? And we found using this sort of poetry of music, and it's in a certain way, it's, we crafted it like one big poem, like one long poem, and it lends it approaches it in a tender way, you know. It's not you know, it's poetic.
Yeah. Your use of voices, like, okay, it's sung a cappella, but there are sort of breaks in which you become a mother, mm-hmm. you become the others, but they all seem to be pushing her on, mm-hmm. telling her what you should be, where you should mm-hmm. be going, and like the mother, well-meaning, but, and then it drives her more and more into a feeling of, I'm not good enough, I'm right. not, and then sinks down deeper and deeper in depression. I really like the way you pulled that off. I thought it was quite great.
Thanks. Well, yeah, I think Natalie's story is one that, as you say, there's a lot of myself in it, a lot of news. There's a lot of us, everyone. I can see, I think everyone, the reason I think people react so strongly to this piece is because they see their lives in it. They see their own lives in it. And it's not a story, it's a story about life that Natalie's surrounded with Natalie is a protagonist, with life, and she is fighting for life, and she does have everything to live for. She's talented, she's beautiful, she has a loving family, everybody believes in her, she's been given this sort of opportunity to exhibit at the Tate Modern, and she's been flown to London, and she's surrounded by the glitz and the glam, and on paper it's what everybody wants, so everybody can look at this and say, you have everything to live for, you've got it all, that I would kill for that. And she's, so everyone's telling her this, and everyone's saying, I believe in you, you know, she, and inside she's, you know, to take a line from the play, inside there's a yellowing corpse, and she's surprised no one can smell it rotting, you know. Inside I don't feel that, and like Sexton and Wolf and Plath, they felt completely alone and isolated, and like no one else can see how I'm suffering inside, and I don't know how how what to do. Well, and as you say, today people struggle with this very same issues, and it's extremely often extremely difficult to declare I'm struggling, I'm suffering, you know, especially when you supposedly have it all.
Oh yeah, oh God forbid. You know. God forbid you complain.
Now,
We're all jumping on her. I just was wondering about if there was a significance to the name Natalie. If there was a reason you chose that name.
That's funny. I was thinking about that yesterday because one of the...
Natalie Wood?
No. But that's interesting.
Well, it's true. She drowned, sort of, maybe.
That's interesting. No, I was in Paris midway through writing creating this play with Nir, with a friend of mine, Natalie. And we were discussing, I was asking her, what's a good name? What's a solid name? And she came up with a few names, and I went to Nir and I said, Natalie thinks this name. He said, no, those are crap, but Natalie, that's a good one.
Oh, great.
That's how it came to be.
Yeah. Two other things for me is basically the way you use your body, the way you transform, like, amazingly into these different people. I would describe your combination of language as basically a musicality of text and body linked. And I found that pretty gripping just by doing that.
I think, as I was saying before, the way we approach it, it's music is just in the same way physicality, if you can sort of, you know, representing shifts and dynamics and spaces through the body, that tool, if we call that physicality, and we call the other tool doing the same thing with music, in terms of when we approach making a play, it's telling a story. It's first and foremost, I'm a storyteller. So I have all these tools I get to choose from. Music is one, physicality is another, a prop is another maybe, or a musical instrument perhaps is another. But we approach it in all in the same way. So I think that's why the shifts from, and there's speech in the show as well. It's about 85% sung probably. Yeah. It's not cut up in that way. It's created in a very organic way. So physicality and music are totally interwoven.
Now the text, for instance, when you're describing artists in their rooms and where they live, through your body language, you seem to be painting pictures. We get a very vivid, for instance, of the artist whose everything you describe is cream-colored, including the lamp. Mm. And you're going, yuck, really? Mm-hmm. Sort of like that. And what is the significance of your dress? Because, for me, the association is immediately pink, but it's salmon pink, but still, it is a stereotypical image of pink being a woman's color.
Yeah, it's also fashioned to echo a 1950s. It's quite 1950s. It's shorter, so it's modern, but it reflects a 1950s pink dress in some ways. I think when I think of, maybe it's my generation, but when I think of the icon of woman, the stereotype, who is, you know, mother, wife, homemaker, I have a house, I have a husband, I have 2.3, I have kids, I have a dog. I think of that. I think of this sort of perfect, you know, 1950s woman. But this dress, and if you see the way, you know, the way it's constructed, it is also very much like armor. And when she sheds it, it's like, look at that. I'm suffocating in this dress. I don't feel right in this dress, and I look like a million bucks, but I certainly don't feel it. And I think it's just an extremely feminine dress, and she's, you know, wearing heels, and she certainly looks the part.
Do you think these themes seem to come up, not just within theater, but also within dances? I mean, there's always been the struggle of the female fitting into society and her place and all of that sort of thing. Why is it still so relevant, do you think, still today, that we're fighting with these same issues?
I think that today, more than ever, 2012, we are surrounded by infinite choice. And I think often instead of this being a liberation, we are frozen by this choice, which is a recurring theme within The Big Smoke, in that she, as I said, she has got everything to live. She's got every possibility laying in front of her, and that she's frozen by this. And I certainly, this is, I feel that in my own life, I felt that, and I feel that especially within my generation, people around me often talk about how the biggest struggle is trying to figure out what you want. And if you know, in Sylvia Plath and Sexton talk about the same issues for sure. I don't know what I want. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I should be. And in some ways, I think it's even more so today that what is the icon of women now? Which stereotype do I fit in now? And I was just talking yesterday with the director. He left yesterday. We were talking about the show Sex in the City and how this is sort of the new version of, like, we're given these four choices. Which one am I? And those are the choices?
Yeah, that's it.
Those choices stink.
Yeah, they do stink.
And I just think we're constantly struggling, or I certainly am. For sure. I'm a woman, and the character in the play is a woman, but I don't think it's certainly both sexes struggle completely.
I feel like, to piggyback on what you were saying about how we have these infinite choices, my mom had said that to me, that she said that, you know, I think it's fantastic that you can choose anything that you want to do, but I think that your generation is going to be paralyzed by it. She said that years ago. Because I think that at the end of the day, what we haven't let go of is, because we have all of these choices now, whatever you choose, you have to be great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where it's a new level of this saying, stifling expectation. You can do whatever you want. Don't waste it. Mm-hmm. So it feels very pressured. I feel that way as someone living right now.
Yeah,
I feel very underachieved.
To feel satisfied. And
yes.
What is it to feel happy?
What is that? You know? I mean, is it a huge show? Is it having that family? It's
mm-hmm.
But right now, that's how it feels. Like, if we're not power superwomen, then somehow we have failed this movement.
Yeah,
and
completely.
That's terrifying. It feels a lot of weight.
I think a lot of people long for structure, more structure, and more limitation, actually.
Yeah.
And then it's certainly complex. But I think in this play, that's definitely the point. People certainly can relate to that. And as I was saying, one of the reasons that we relate to this story and that we fall in love with this girl, this Natalie, is that we see so much of ourselves in her, in that she's a sharp, witty, sarcastic woman who's, you know, she's it's a poetic play, but she's certainly not in a way that Anne Sexton, if you know anything about Anne Sexton, Anne Sexton is this sexy, like, amazing powerhouse of raw woman, and she takes no prisoners, but she's a poet. This kind of amazing, you want to be here, and you want to be her friend, and you want to know her, and Natalie's kind of like that, and you see so much of yourself in her, so you follow her down this journey, and then at a certain point in the play, hopefully you separate and you watch her go,
right,
where you don't see yourself so much.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Amy, for coming on.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
To March the 4th, mm-hmm. at Factory Studio Theatre. That's located at the corner of Bathurst and Adelaide. And you have a website, right?
TheatreAdInfinitum.co.uk, or you can buy tickets at the factorytheatre.ca website as well.
Yes. And everybody should check this play out,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, I've been hearing wonderful things about it.
Yeah.
And it's great that you're back. Welcome back.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You are listening to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Danse Emotion Expo 2012 is the premier event for Montreal's dance industry. Happening at Place Bonaventure in Montreal, Quebec, from April 28th to the 29th, Danse Emotion will bring together the largest dance community, attract thousands, and provide networking opportunities, workshops, and the latest in industry products. Danse Emotion offers opportunities for companies to present mini seminars, workshops, conferences, and showcase your company to the industry. Connect with the leading dance establishments and professionals in the industry. Open to the public and an essential event for all aspiring dancers, dance enthusiasts, or anyone involved in the field. Participants include Cirque du Soleil, National Ballet of Canada, American Music and Dramatic Academy College, Randolph Academy of Performing Arts, So You Think You Can Dance Canada Celebrity Judge, Trey Armstrong, a new DAEI Dance Studio, École Supérieure de Ballet Classique de Québec, and many more. You may purchase tickets and workshop passes now online. Danse Emotion is still accepting exhibitors. For more information, please visit the Danse Emotion website at danseemotion.com, danseemotion.com, or contact info at danseemotion.com.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
So lonely, I went up to the window, lightning banging on the cymbals. I ripped into the night, came storming to your eyes. My horse had worked the fields too long, my bear had lost his innate calm. It's true enough for not a kiss, but peace is never what it seems. Our love is not the light it was when I walk inside the dark I'm gone. Why we look for where it went, it's only echoes in the melody now. We gotta let go and stop looking through the halo. We carry on as if the time is true. You carry on as if I don't love you. And so we find the way out to cut the heart out of the doubt now. The rooms full of hearts are empty, like the letters never sent me. And words are like a lesson, you're an instrumental too.
That was Feist from her new album, Metals, which was released this year on the label Arts and Crafts. I'm Andrea Duff, and you are listening to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM. Coming up next, we have Sylvain Imar live from Montreal to talk about his new production that's going to be down at Harbourfront Center on March 3rd, one night only. It's called Fragments, Volume 1. We're going to get him on the phone. But first, we're just going to talk a little bit about a production called Les Demi-Mondes that's happening at Buddies in Bad Times Theater next weekend. It's going to be March 2nd and to the 4th. We were going to have Alex Tigalar on and perhaps Catherine Nemo, who are both co-producers of the Operation Snatch production company, which is putting off Les Demi-Mondes, formerly of the Scandals. They've recently retired that name, and they are now going strictly under Operation Snatch and using their birth names, I should say. So Alex Tigalar and Catherine Nemo, also starring Jesse Dell and Andrea Duff. But the show is about prostitution and sex work throughout the ages. It is a multimedia production. There's text and video and dance and high production value, everything that you can imagine in a show like that. So it runs Friday the 2nd at 8 p.m., a show every night at 8 p.m., so it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 8 p.m., and then there's also a Sunday matinee at 3 p.m. On the 4th. And you can contact Buddies in Bad Times Theater if you'd like more information or you'd like to book tickets. I think it's going to be an excellent show. They've actually done a couple of incarnations of this particular show. And this is the final, or the latest, not final, but the latest. And then they'll be heading off to Montreal to check out the Edgy Women Festival with this latest production. So I'm pretty excited for them. I've actually been working with them since 2006, and to watch them evolve as a theater company has been very exciting. I remember the very first production that I ever did with Alex. She halfway through said, "Well, I can't remember lines, you know, I'm not an actress." And I never thought of her that way, because that's how I met her, in that capacity, writing all these shows and being the voice behind all of these incredible ideas, with some help along the way, for sure, by some very talented artists. So now to see these shows, that they're tighter and the character work is stronger. Alex is definitely off book, proudly. And Catherine Nemo as a performer is outstanding. And what's exciting about Les Demi-Mondes, for people that have actually been following the Scandals and now Operation Snatch, is that she speaks on stage. And that's the first. It's a very powerful monologue about her connection to the material, her connection to sex work in particular, and her opinions on that. And it's such a beautiful moment, because she's always been a performer that gets incredibly lost into every character that she's ever done. People come to see the shows and they say, "Oh, and who was this girl? And who was this girl?" And say, "Oh, that was all her. That was all Kat." She really gets lost in these characters. And so for her to be so forthcoming with her own experience is an extremely riveting moment. And Alex's undeniable research and understanding into this topic and the history that she goes through within the whole show, from the, you know, beginnings that she could find and to the infinity that this particular career owns. She describes it all, and she explains it all with extreme knowledge and wit, and some very interesting references. Anyway, so I'm excited for it. It's at Buddies in Bad Times Theater. It's on March 3rd, running through the 4th. Again, there's a show every night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 8 p.m., and then 3 o'clock matinee on Sunday. Anyway, it would be great if you can come out and see that. Stay with us, because we are going to be talking to Sylvain Imar.
North wind sings the fence around a lot full of debris near the corner of Memorial and me, where resurrected brick and drywall leap back into place. There's a terrified reflection of my face. All alone at the gleaming knife display in the army surplus sales, as the dusk descends and my inspiration fails. film discount parkas, sleeping bags, peer at me from the crumpled dark. Inky bruises punched into the sky by bolts of light, and then leak across the body of tonight. While rain and thunder drop and roll, then stop short of a storm, leave the air stuck with this waiting to be born. As I stand before an unresponsive automatic door, just another door that won't open for me anymore. The exit.
Hi, welcome back to CIUT 89.5 FM and Evidence. I'm Ted Fox.
I'm Andrea Duff, and that was actually John K. Samson from his title album Provincial, and it was a track called Heart of the Continent.
Really,
it was beautiful.
It. Yeah,
I
yeah. So, Sylvain, are you there?
Hi,
Sylvain. How are you? Yeah, okay. So your show is coming up one night only, March the 3rd at Harborfront Center here in Toronto. Now, your company's been around, Sylvain, since 1987, and from what I've seen, it seems to combine physicality, dance, theater, and slightly multidisciplinary. Can you describe what you are doing with your dance company?
Well, I'm doing working on different type of projects. Like at the beginning of the company, I was more influenced by theater, since I was before that I was working as an actor. So I was very much influenced by theater when I started to choreograph. But in the last year, I was more focused on the on the more formal aspect of dance, with not using props or a heavy set, or addressing the piece with characters in the piece. Mm-hmm. So it's more, I'm more addressing the physicality for as a form and also as a content also. And so in this particular performance we're going to present in Toronto and across Canada is a collage of four short pieces, solos, three solos and one duet. So it's very intimate forms. And besides that, since you're asking what type of work I've been doing lately, besides that, I'm also working on a very large scale event, which is called the Continental, which is using non-professional dancers, and it's with 200 non-professional dancers. So it's we're performing, in big spaces outside. So
I've seen that, and it's a mix of people, and it's shown in the evenings, and you get loads and loads of people. It's a great way to introduce audiences to dance.
Yeah,
and I've never seen so many people watching at the same time.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
And you have about 100 dancers, yeah, and they're all moving in sync, and it's a great show for people to see.
Oh, yeah, I created that show just for one event in 2009, thinking it was going to be, just like one shot deal. And since it got so successful, so year after year we've been doing it, and it's been like increasing, and last year we had like 20,000 people watching the show. So yeah. So actually Pragma is at the opposite of that. Yeah.
Hello?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry. Your sound had just gone for a moment there.
Okay.
Okay, so the piece fragments, why is it called Fragments? And it's a series of four pieces, basically, short pieces.
Yeah.
And can you describe the inspiration for this?
Yeah, well, since I wanted to go back to what I was, you know, working at first when I created my company, I was working on, you know, small pieces, and then I started to work on, like, full program pieces. And now, you know, for, you know, after all those years, I wanted to go back to those short forms. And so I wanted to address the subject of the piece, of all the pieces, is urgency. So I wanted to, maybe because I, you know, I feel that the time is passing too fast, and I felt the need to address that subject, and so I choose to ask all the dancers involved in every pieces what they was for them was urgent in their life at that time, so we kind of share. You know, we discussed about that, and that was the base of every small pieces. And even though, you know, the subject is the same for the four short pieces, it's very interesting to observe that they are very different. And so it's we tend to think that urgency is necessarily something that will create high speed thing, you know, like very dynamic and speed, and it's not actually the case. So it was very interesting to create different atmosphere around the same subject.
Now, Monique Miller, how old is she?
Well,
and she's an actress of well known, and I've seen her for years and years.
Yeah.
And being older myself, I feel, oh, boy, time's going faster and faster and faster. So there is a lot of urgency.
yeah, absolutely. There. And you know, yeah. Well, I don't know exactly her age, but she's been like working as a professional for over 60 years. So it gives you an idea. She's been here for a long time, and. But for her, you know, urgency is not something necessarily that is has to do with something that has to happen now and very fast. It's more about a need, you know, an urgent need, but that is not being fulfilled, you know. And so it's kind of interesting at her age to, you know, to address that way. And also you have like much younger dancers, and of course it's for them, it's they have different concerns.
What is it about urgency that struck you right now?
Well, it's just that, you know, I feel that, you know, with in general in society, I feel, you know, regarding all the what's going on. Mm-hmm. I feel that we have no time to lose, you know. It's everything, it seems to me, like we have to find better ways to do things, you know. And so in creation, I find that I should not waste my time and waste people's time, you know.
Right.
And for me, you know, I thought that, you know, I should, you know, address that. And also, it would involve more the dancer in the process, you know, by sharing their concerns or their questioning about urgency. So I felt that it was a nice way to add a kind of a special vibration to the pieces.
It's actually making me think myself, what do I feel urgent about or urgency about right now? And I'm not really sure. But
and
I'd
what
have to,
it is.
I'd have to marinate in that for a little bit.
Yeah.
But this is also, it's called Volume 1, which alludes to a volume, it alludes to a Volume 2.
Yeah.
Is that the case? Is this going to be an ongoing?
Yeah, but not very soon. I think in 2 years. One or 2 years when we're going to be celebrating the 25th year of the company.
Yeah.
I was thinking of working on Volume 2 and maybe incorporating older pieces in it. Yeah, and create kind of a library of short pieces with Volume 1 and Volume 2.
I like that you call them miniatures.
The what?
A collection of miniatures.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you choose your dancers and your performers for this process?
Well, I go for dancers that really inspire me, and really, it goes from very highly skilled technical dancers, but to non-professional dancers like Monique Miller. She's a high, great professional actress, but she's not a professional dancer. But she's very inspiring, and she has such a presence on stage, and it's the same for the three other dancers. So I go with dancers that really, I have to fall in love with the dancers work with. And I rarely audition. Sometimes I do, just so that, I get to know new dancers, but most of the time I go out and see, dance a lot, and I fall in love with different dancers, and then I ask professionally, I would say, I ask them, if they want to work with me, I find that, the dancer always influence the result of the work, because it's also the personality of the dancer that interests me.
Well, you sound like you're a choreographer that very much requires the dancer's experience in order to create.
Yeah.
That they need to be a real part of it rather than just vessels for your vision.
Yeah. And I that's right. But I tend to do, maybe 10 years ago, I was more... tend to work with more mature dancers, but now I feel that I'm more at ease with younger dancers, and I find that I'm much more comfortable with, and I find that they do also, even if they're young, they have a lot to share also. So now I'm more interested in exploring, all ages. And when in the Grand Continental, actually it goes from 10 years old to 75 years old. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and some of those children are so good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Now, how is your process with each? You did touch on it a bit. There's two that we don't know in Toronto, Manuel and Catherine, and they certainly have really intriguing backgrounds. So how did you work with each? Like Monique, say, might have minimalist movement, as opposed to Laurence, who graduated from the School of TDT here in Toronto, might have a more younger, like wider energy and physicality. That sort of idea?
Yeah, but also Manuel Roque is strangely, and that's a coincidence because I didn't choose him for that. But he has like Laurence, they both have a gymnastic circus background. So they're doing a duet together, so it works really well. I mean, they're not doing like circus or acrobatic tricks, but they have the same way of using their center of gravity, so that's very interesting, and it brings more than just a dance technique. And Catherine, well, I know her for many years now, because she actually worked as a graduating dance student. She danced one of my pieces, and that's how I met her, and I thought she was very, very interesting. I think actually she's one of the best dancers in Montreal, and they all are. I mean, you can tell I'm in love with them.
She also has a blog too, right? It's something.
Sorry?
A blog. She has her own blog, and I like the name of it. The dancer is not very heavy in balance. I think is that the literal?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's also an osteopath, so that I think it's the combination.
Yeah, she's very into fighting for the the rights for the dancers, and which I find very important because too often we forget about, you know, the dancers, and we're just talking about the choreography and the choreographer and the set designer, but we rarely mention the dancer or like, for instance, in publicity, you know. I think she's doing a great job for that.
Can you tell me something about the composer of the music and how the music relates to these pieces?
The three first pieces has been composed by Michel F. Côté, which I work with for many years now. We know each, you know, we're used to work together, and with Michel, what's interesting is that we both, every time we start a new project, we really like to challenge ourselves and not, you know, work in our comfortable zones, you know, because we know each other. So we try to find ways so that it would, you know, allow us to find and discover new ways of working together and new things. And so he's actually always involved. Very soon, very early in the process, but I always start like with no music first, you know. Not always, but most of the time I start working in the studio just the dancers and me, and we work on the gesture and movement, and after a while then after maybe 2-3 weeks then the composer comes in, and then he's regularly attending the rehearsal and working, you know, with all his material in the studio. For the last piece, it's different because it's I work with a German composer from Berlin, and what was interesting, well, I just discovered his work, you know, by listening to his work, you know, accidentally on internet, and I thought it was very interesting, so I just contacted him, and we actually worked through internet for a while, and then for the very last part of the work, he came for 2 weeks in Montreal to finalize the music. But at the beginning, we worked, you know, we were sending material through internet, so that was new for me to work that way, and for him, it was the first time he was working with dance, and that also I like a lot, to work with artists that never work with dance before, because I think it's always refreshing.
Yeah. Sorry, Sylvain. Before we let you go, we're running out of time. I just was curious, why only one night?
I don't know.
Oh, that was your call, hey? I thought,
I don't
my
know
God.
Well, actually, we're doing a matinee the day before.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
On the second.
On the second at 1 o'clock, but I think I'm not sure if it's only for universities and colleges.
That's possible, because it hasn't been advertised, but now we just advertised it. So.
But I don't know why just one night. But after that, we're going to Edmonton and Vancouver, and it's all, you know, like aligned, you know, very.
Okay. We've about run out of time. One other thing, that German composer you mentioned, is there a website for him? A blog?
Yes, he has a website.
And his name?
His name is Jan Jelinek. It's J-A-N Jelinek, J-E-L-N-E-K.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, and you run on March the 3rd, Harborfront Center's End Wave Theater.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to thank
you. I'm thanking you.
Okay.
With a pleasure.
Okay. And the other thing I'd like to thank is Amy Nostbacken. And the show runs out on March the 4th at Factory Studio Theater. Go to theater@infinitum.co.uk. And I highly recommend that show. I saw it. And next week, Yovana will be on here about her new show upcoming. I'm Ted Fox.
I'm Andrea Duff.
And we'll see you next week on Evidence at CIUT 89.5 FM.